why it's important to focus on is that we now know that body confidence affects all key areas of girls' lives. So what most people might think of when they think about body confidence might be self-esteem, for example. But we know from really robust research with girls that it affects their physical health and their mental health. So if you have low body confidence, you're more likely to feel depressed and anxious. You might struggle with disordered eating behaviors, exercising too much or perhaps too little. Through to things like avoiding going to the doctor or even putting your hand up in the classroom, 8 out of 10 girls globally, when they have low body confidence, opt out of important life activities like that.
It's estimated that young girls are exposed to nearly 600 media messages per day. They can't escape the barrage of messages about the perfect look, the perfect weight, the perfect size, the perfect skin tone. And this doesn't count the intentional and unintentional messages they get from friends, parents, or other caring adults. Why don't you try straightening your hair? You'd be a better soccer player if you had just lost 5 pounds. Do you really need to eat all of that? The sad truth is that we know the vast majority of girls are internalizing these messages. Society teaches them that their body image defines who they are. This puts them in relentless pursuit of an unattainable standard of beauty, intent on changing some element of their appearance, often an element that isn't easily altered. Too many girls are held hostage by their own negative body image issues, and it's up to us to help them understand that they are so, so much more than their weight on the scale. This battle is a critical one. Just imagine what a girl can do with the energy she is currently channeling into chasing an impossible image of beauty. Let's help the girls in your lives befriend their bodies and own the power of their uniqueness as they need to embrace the truth we know well. Beauty is far more than skin deep. Before jumping into our conversation, let's hear from some girls on what they have to say about our topic today.
Can you remember when you first started being aware that many girls were self-conscious about the ways their body or some part of their body was viewed by others? How old were you and what were the circumstances?
Probably maybe end of middle school, going into high school, having like that fear that, okay, like my whole life is about to change. Just like going into a new area and meeting a bunch of new people, going into an unknown space that you really don't know what's going to happen. I think that you just become very conscious of like everything that you do. So whether that's how you put your hair that morning or what outfit you wore, I think social media just impacts everything these days. It's such a big part of our culture as teenagers, not just girls, but boys. I think it's just a huge factor into everybody's lives. And I think it impacts the conversation about body image in the respect that everybody knows that people only post themselves at the best. I know that personally, but sometimes if I see girls posting, I'll be like, wow, like I wish I looked like them. But like, I know they're only posting that because they think that they look amazing. So it's just like a subconscious thing that I think we all do.
I'm Trudy Hall, your host for The Connected Girl, a podcast series produced by the International Coalition of Girls' Schools and part of the On Educating Girls series. And today I'm excited to engage with Dr. Philippa Diedrichs, a professor of psychology at the Center for Appearance Research at the University of the West of England in Bristol, England. A speaker, author, and researcher, she's also the founder of Everybody Consulting, a global consulting group of thought leaders and social scientist experts in body image, appearance diversity, and mental health. She takes great delight in smashing beauty stereotypes, and I'm thrilled to have her talk with us about how we can do this in the lives of the girls we know. Philippa, I am really excited to be able to speak with you about this very important topic.
I'm so glad to be here with you, Trudy.
So let me just dive in and have you offer a compelling reason why the adults who have girls in their lives should listen to this episode. What do you know that they should know about girls and body image?
Well, what we know from several decades of research and my work speaking to thousands of girls around the world is that body confidence is a really important issue for girls in childhood, but in particular as they go through into puberty and to adulthood. And what we see from the research is that up to 80% of girls will struggle with body confidence. And from the age of 11, as early as 11, it can stabilize. So what happens before then, and the body confidence girls have at age 11, often keeps going into adolescence. But also, sadly, we don't graduate from body image concerns. So it's a really key time to think about fostering body confidence. And why it's important to focus on is that we now know that body confidence affects all key areas of girls' lives. So what most people might think of when they think about body confidence might be self-esteem, for example. But we know from really robust research with girls that it affects their physical health and their mental health. So if you have low body confidence, you're more likely to feel depressed and anxious. You might struggle with disordered eating behaviors, exercising too much or perhaps too little, through to things like avoiding going to the doctor or even putting your hand up in the classroom. 8 out of 10 girls globally, when they have low body confidence, opt out of important life activities like that. And also things like trying out for a team or club and asserting their opinion. So it really affects physical and mental health, relationships, but also girls' career and education aspirations and performance, and whether or not they feel comfortable to take up space in the world and to assert themselves. So it impacts individual girls, but us as a society, because when girls hold themselves back, we miss out on all of the amazing things that they can offer.
You really know your data. And that's exactly why I wanted to start with that question, because I hope it got the attention of all of our listeners. There's some striking facts in there. And as I become really familiar with your great work, that's one of the things I love about it. It's based in very solid evidence-based research. So I'm wondering how you came to be, in your own words, a social scientist on a mission. What launched you into this important space?
Well, interesting. I was a girl when I started work in this space. So I didn't know it at the time, but I was in year 10 at school in Australia. So I would have been around the age of 15. And I actually gave my first presentation on this topic in my social studies class. And what really drew me to this topic was I was a budding feminist at the time and felt really strongly about girls like me and my friends having the same rights and opportunities as the boys. But also I noticed around me how body image and our thoughts and feelings about how we look in our bodies really impacted my friends, but it also impacts the way other people treat you. I can remember specific examples when I was in grade 4 at primary school and boys making comments about my body and my weight. And when I talk to people, I've now been doing this for many years, studying it and researching it formally as an academic for 20 years. And what's striking to me is I hear these similar stories no matter where you're from in the world. So I did that presentation because what also really interested me was how culture and society can influence how we feel about ourselves. And body image is a really amazing example of that, because it is a gendered issue. We know that it disproportionately affects girls and gender diverse people. Everyone is affected, boys and men too, but consistently what we see in the science is that girls are disproportionately affected. But interestingly, we also know that it's driven by lots of factors. There is a slight genetic element to it, but essentially the way we think about the world and process information has an impact. But importantly, our families, our friends, social media, as well as broader cultural and social norms all go into shaping how we feel about our bodies. And also I want to point out that body image is not just about our thoughts and feelings about the way that we look, which is a really crucial component. And that's the bit that people often think of, which can lead some people to dismiss it and say, well, this is just silly little girls who want to be beautiful, who are thinking about their looks. It's not silly, obviously. I've already pointed out how this can affect all key areas of girls' lives and women's lives. And also not silly because still in society, this is how we're valued as women and girls by our looks. But also body image is about how we think and feels about what our bodies can do. And this is really important because we're trying to send the message to girls, you're so much more than how you look. So it's also about how they relate to their bodies. And that's why it has an impact throughout the life. So I want to create a world where nobody is held back because of how they look, that women and girls in particular feel free to express themselves how they want through their appearance. It's optional if they want to do that, and that they're not going to be penalized because of the way that they look. And that's what's really driven me from my high school presentation through to studying psychology, doing a PhD in the area. And now I lead a team of researchers at a university focusing on this topic.
So let's just talk about messaging for a moment. I know that one of the most pervasive and sometimes destructive forces in this work is messaging in the world of advertising and marketing. So that is also changing. Can you give us some examples of how advertising plays into the stereotypes?
So we used to see this a lot in particular in the research, particularly in the 90s and the early 2000s, where researchers actually systematically went through magazines, music videos, children's books, children's films, to see how people who looked different, had different types of appearances, were portrayed. And what we consistently saw, particularly when it came to girls and women, that there was an overrepresentation of women who were very thin and very much conformed to a Eurocentric beauty ideal. And they were often objectified as well. And so not only were you seeing a very narrow representation of the women that we see in everyday life when it comes to body size, age, skin color, etc., but the way they were portrayed was also problematic because they were often portrayed very passively. So they would just be standing next to a product, not doing anything relevant to the product. They also could be quite disembodied. So sometimes you wouldn't even see their head. There were a lot of headless bodies zoomed in on the breasts, for example, which basically is this idea that it can send the message that women are objects to be looked at. And we know from the research, when women and girls look at this type of content, that's the message they get. They take it on board and then they start to see themselves as objects to be consumed by other people. Interestingly, it's slightly changed now with social media. We have brands and celebrities, as they always have, being involved in advertising, but we also now have everyday people through social media influencers, or potentially anyone can take on the role of advertiser if you have a product sponsored. And so that is also interesting because the regulation around advertising on social media, particularly influencers and content creators, is a lot harder to regulate, and there are much less regulations around that. Whereas big brands and companies, there are different alliances now around the world to do with gender stereotyping and advertising, doesn't necessarily apply or match up when it comes to social media influencers creating their own products and services and marketing things.
So if we shift to social media for a moment, every single time I talk to someone about social media and girls, they're quick to say there are both positives and negatives. I'm really aware of some of the negatives with social media. Can you talk also about positives, or are there positives as we think about pluses and minuses of social media in this particular topic?
Yeah. Originally, say 10 years ago or so, when we started researching social media and body image, we saw kind of a very simplistic relationship, which was the more time spent on social media, the worse your body image is. But as you're suggesting, we know that it's a lot more nuanced than that. It's about what you're doing on social media. And in fact, what we now know is some types of activities on social media, like doom scrolling or passively just consuming a lot of content, is problematic. It can make us feel low mood, isolated. If you're looking at content that features really idealized images of beauty, or heavily filtered images, or even very objectifying images, that can be problematic for body image. And interestingly, selfies in and of themselves can sometimes be quite objectifying, because you're taking a selfie, you don't often get much of what's behind you or what you're doing. You're kind of passively looking at yourself, basically. So that can be quite objectifying. But interestingly, what we know, particularly over the past 5 years, there are lots of opportunities on social media to actually develop more positive body image. So one of the key things that became really clear early on with social media is that it offered an opportunity to see lots of different people that you wouldn't normally see in mainstream advertising and mainstream media. As I said before, it was very limited, the depictions of women in the media and girls when it came to how they looked. So we saw almost like a democratizing of the beauty space, in the sense that you had content creators, influencers, everyday people creating content that you could follow. So essentially what we've seen in the research, that when you are exposed to people of different body sizes and shapes, for example, or skin tones or facial appearances on social media, that can have a beneficial impact to your body image, or at least cause no harm, which is better than what we were seeing before. We also know that it allows people to find community. So people who might look like them or, for example, who might have the same style, for example, as they do, or the same interests. And so you're relating to people who might be more simple to you. And then finally, the access to support. It can be hard because there are a lot of, particularly in the body image space, body positive influences and sometimes, and content creators, sometimes what they're putting out there is not so great. But there are some really great accounts and sources out there where young people can access for free help and like information and education on how to look after themselves and have more positive body image.
You've done a great job of giving us some of the reasons why we should pay attention to this and giving us some of the factors that play into it. So now let's go to strategies for parents, for teachers, for adults who care about girls. What's the safest way to start a conversation about body image with a girl?
So there's lots of great resources out there, fortunately, now that parents and teachers can access, which is really nice to be able to say because 10 years ago, it wasn't necessarily the case. And what's really important, what I would recommend is there's some great guides that have been developed, but importantly also tested with parents and girls to make sure that they're effective and that they're safe and that they're helpful. And I can let you know where to find those in a bit. But essentially, one of the first things, though, I recommend to parents and teachers is to think about their own body image. So how can they improve their own relationship with their bodies? It's a bit like when you're on a plane, you are told to put on your oxygen mask first before you help others. And it's a little bit the same in this context. If you can start to heal your own relationship with your body and start to learn more about body image and having a positive body image in general, that will naturally benefit the people around you, including your children. That will affect your thoughts about it, your sense of confidence to talk about the topic, but also just the everyday modeling that you will show of how you relate to your own body is really important. So that's the first thing that I recommend. Then when it comes to speaking to your daughter, say, about these topics, what can often be really interesting is to ask them for their opinions and thoughts. So when they're using social media, if depending on what their age is, or to ask what they think about it and keep the conversation open initially. What do they like? What don't they like? And then one of the really good things to help them start thinking critically about the content they consume, because that's what you want to be doing, is helping them to develop media literacy skills. How can they look at social media and think critically about who chose that image? Why did they pick that one to be posted? If it's an advertisement, why did the brand choose that person? What are they trying to sell? Importantly, what do you think they're trying to tell you that if you buy that product, what's going to happen to you? So those can be really good conversation starters in a way that's non-judgmental. It's somewhat neutral. You're not necessarily telling them exactly what they should be doing, but you're developing those critical thinking skills.
Can we dive in a bit more to the role modeling element for adults who are working with girls? You had mentioned a very good objective of healing themselves first or beginning to work on their own body image first is what I should say. What else are they doing in terms of role modeling? Is there language they should be leaning into?
Yeah, so what can be really helpful is to think about what critical comments you might be making about your own body without thinking in front of your daughter. So if you are making comments like, oh, I look so old today, or mummy shouldn't be eating that cake, I need to watch what I eat, or I look terrible today, or I look so tired. So even though those comments aren't directed at the child, they're still observing you being critical about your own appearance, or potentially if you make comments about other people's weight, for example, that's still very much sending the message that appearance is important. And interestingly, what we even see sometimes when you witness positive comments, so say you're meeting up with a friend and you comment on how they look, you might say, oh, you look amazing. Have you lost weight? And your daughter is there next to you. What that really is sending a message, even though it's a compliment, is you notice other people's weight, you make a judgment, and there's a value judgment to that, that losing weight or being smaller is better. And it's challenging because we grew up in this culture as well. So we've experienced these pressures ourselves. So it's really hard to then think, oh, I need to improve this for my child. So be kind to yourself as well. This is like a thing that we've all experienced, but being more mindful. And if it's challenging for you, just not commenting on people's bodies to begin with, thinking about something else to talk about. There are so many other attributes of our friends, our family member, and our children that we can talk about. Another area often comes up is in relation to eating and the comments that get made around eating, what's good and bad food, for example, and around health. And that can be a really tricky one for parents to navigate. But I think what I would say there just really simply is just thinking about how you encourage your child to listen to their body's needs, to listen to their hunger signals, and to be non-judgmental and non-emotive when talking about food is really important as well.
This is going to be hard work, isn't it? I say that because, as you mentioned, it's so deeply embedded in the ways in which we were raised. So not only are we trying to present ourselves in a different way to the girls in our lives, we're also trying to think about how we ourselves operate in the world because of what we might be inflicting on others, not even aware of what we're doing. Really challenging stuff.
It is really challenging, but I think now we do have resources out there that are available. And even just having this conversation, thinking about these topics and discussing it with friends about how they manage it and thinking back to what was it like when you grew up? What were the comments that were made? How did that make you feel? We've all been there before ourselves, and having that opportunity to reflect, what do you wish could have happened differently when you were growing up? And perhaps that's something that you can implement with your child as well.
I want to make sure that we focus on one thing that we haven't talked about, because you've referred to it a couple of times, that as adults engage with this, as schools engage with this, as helping types engage with this, they need to be somewhat mindful of the resources they're selecting. And you mentioned a couple times now that the programs need to be tested. Could I give you a moment to just talk about, what am I looking for? What kind of program is tested? How would I know? What do I ask?
It's a really good point, because there are a lot of tools available now developed by people who are very well-intentioned in this space, but they don't necessarily work. In fact, sometimes they can cause harm. So what you want to make sure is that, for example, if you're a teacher in a school and you're delivering a lesson plan, or you're a parent who wants to speak to your school and you want them to address the topic of body confidence, that you use tools that are what we call evidence-based. So they are developed based on the best available science. They've actually been tested and evaluated to make sure they have the impact that we're hoping to have, but also the voices of girls, other education and youth professionals, and also parents have been taken into consideration. So what you look for, so you want to look for a credible source, an authority on the topic. And there are, fortunately, as I said, some freely available. So one go-to spot that I would recommend is looking at the resources on the Dove Self-Esteem Project website. So they are actually freely available online. They've been translated into many languages around the world, and they've been developed in collaboration with experts, including my team at the Center for Appearance Research, where we've conducted really rigorous research with thousands of young people around the world to make sure that they work, and also to make sure that we know teachers can deliver them effectively. And there's resources on their lesson plans for teachers, there's conversation guides for parents, etc., on how to deliver them. So have they been developed with experts? Is it potentially aligned with an organization that you trust, like the Girl Guides and Girl Scouts, for example, or UNICEF, for example? And then also making sure that, where possible, that training is made available. So those tools that I spoke about on the Dove website, you can pick up and run with them. They've been designed to do that. So there's lesson plans, there's brief videos you can watch. We're confident and we know that people can pick these up and run with them. And they're great ones to use with a whole classroom or one-on-one with a child. What you also want to look at, though, if a child or a group of girls, for example, might be experiencing more significant concerns, so they're already showing signs of distress or maybe disordered eating behaviors around dieting, etc., that's when you might want to have a more specialized program, because there's not necessarily going to be a one size fits all. But there are some really robust programs out there. One is called the Body Project in particular, where anyone in the community can be trained to deliver it. And that's also been shown to reduce disordered eating and prevent the onset of eating disorders. Then finally, what I would also suggest is, in addition to harnessing schools and teachers and parents, making sure that your daughters have resources themselves that they can access and digest whenever they want to. And so this could be podcasts, for example. I recently did a series with Rebel Girls on podcasts, which is evidence-based tips for girls and a narrative. I also recently published a book for teenage girls, which is illustrated. It's really easy, digestible, lots of practical exercises and tips. And I've had parents tell me that sometimes they've just left it around the house for their daughter to read. Sometimes they've read it together and they've found that that's actually been a really lovely way to connect. So looking at those resources as well. And then on social media, just making sure that if you're taking advice, particularly about diet, nutrition, or health and well-being, that whoever you're taking advice from actually has the appropriate qualifications to give that advice. Sure, most people can share their own personal experiences, which can be really great. But if you're thinking about applying that advice to yourself or to your child, you really want to make sure that they have the right qualifications.
I'm so pleased that you mentioned the number of resources that you did, but especially the Dove work, because I've been very impressed by the ways in which they've done that. And I think that allows itself to be used as individually, a parent and a child could look at them together or in a small group. So I'm really excited about that work as well. And of course, we'll put a link to your book in the end notes. I hope our listeners know that you are a tireless campaigner for good and a deep believer in research-based strategies. Can you leave our listeners with 2 to 3 key pieces of wisdom that you know they can put to use as they ensure their girls in their lives are connected in positive ways to their body?
Absolutely. One thing that I would invite anyone listening to do is to start thinking about practicing body appreciation. It's a really effective strategy that we can all implement. Doesn't cost us anything, doesn't take much time, but is to take moments to think about what we're grateful for that our bodies allow us to do. This is a science-backed strategy. And if you think about it, our bodies are constantly doing so many different things for us. Right now, as we're sitting here talking or listening to this, our digestion systems are working, we're breathing, our skin is renewing and all sorts of wonderful things to keep us alive. Our brains are paying attention and processing information. So we have all of these internal things that our bodies are doing, but also our bodies allow us to, my arms allow me to hug my partner, to pick up children. My body moves me through the world. It might also allow me to be creative. My taste buds allow me to taste great food, etc. So one really important strategy, if you notice yourself having a negative thought about your body, try and replace that or at least match it with one thing that you're grateful for that your body allows you to do is a really great strategy. And then one of the other things that I would recommend doing is being really aware of the content that you consume on social media and doing a bit of a cull of accounts that make you doubt yourself. Or if you notice yourself comparing yourself, the way that you look to the people on social media that you're seeing, whether they're friends or whether they're celebrities or influencers, and do a little bit of an experiment where you either unfollow them for a week or, you know, if it's a bit awkward, if it's a friend and you see yourself, you know, making those judgments, you can mute them so that they will never know that you've done this. And just try that experiment for a week and notice how you feel about your body when you're not consuming that type of content. And if that feels good to you, then consider either having breaks from social media or really curating a social media feed that inspires and uplifts you. One person I heard say social media should be like your own personal magazine, for example, or your own personal media platform. You get to choose what content you consume. So be quite mindful about what it is and just reflect, is this making me feel at best neutral about myself? Is it making me feel inspired? Am I learning something? If you notice yourself spiraling into comparisons, it's a time to rethink.
This has been really helpful because for all of our listeners, the work begins with us. We need to do this hard work first, but, and this is a plus, we get to do this work in partnership with the girls in our lives. We get to do this work together to be open about what we're doing, to be open about what the agenda is. And third, there are lots of resources to help. We're not having to do this alone. So I want to thank you so very much for your time this morning to allow us to understand how we dive into this critical topic in the lives of girls. It's been a true pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to The Connected Girl, a podcast produced by the International Coalition of Girls' Schools to address real issues that impact the lives of girls we know. This episode is the 5th in a series of 6 podcasts engaging listeners to think about the many ways that the connections in girls' lives keep them whole and healthy and let them know they matter. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to The Connected Girl on the ICGS's podcast channel on educating girls, so you can check out the rest of the series. Thanks for listening. It's important to the girls in your lives that you do. The International Coalition of Girls' Schools created this series in true partnership with True Stories. Podcast production by Carol Williams, with audio editing, engineering, and sound design by Rebecca Fansale. thanks to all the girls featured in the audio clips in these episodes of the Connected Girls series. For more information, please refer to the show notes.